Before we jump into today's episode, I want to tell you something, guys. We've got a Patreon, and it's you can access it for as little as £3 a month. It's got loads of great benefits over there. It's got the live shows that we do, including the Pavilion in Glasgow.
The full version of it. And back behind-the-scenes footage. We've also got behind-the-scenes from the Glee. We've done a wee documentary at the Fringe, a day at the Fringe from last August.
Very cool documentary. We do an extra episode every 2 weeks.
Yes.
We do...
We probably have some more bonus content from the public episode. Get a wee extra bits.
Yep.
We're starting to put up there very shortly as well.
Yeah, we also do, like, we give you access to if we do stand-up shows for the Some Laugh stand-up shows. We've done two or three now. And
first
they've all
dibs
been,
on tickets.
All been fun. So you get
and
to... Yeah, first dibs on that.
For any upcoming Some Laugh Live shows as well. So all of that, for as little as £3 a month over on the Patreon. We should mention as well that myself and Stuart's Fringe show tickets are on sale. Maybe by this point, Steve, a wee couple of things you're doing will be there too.
A few dates at the Fringe, look out for that, guys.
Yeah, so all those links will be in the description. Hopefully see you there. And aside from that, enjoy today's episode.
Enjoy.
Welcome to the Some Laugh Podcast.
It could be like, oh, that was some laugh, or there was just some laughs.
Some laughs. Well, no promising all laugh.
No, there's going to be some.
It's some laugh. I always think that would be a good point to get to in an acting career, like the point where you could play the president. Like, if you get that kind of statesperson-like quality to you.
Do you think you could play the president?
I would like to. I feel like I could... Oh, like a prime minister, and
Prime minister,
and what's your American accent like?
No, bad, right?
No, but let me hear it.
Let's hear it.
Let me be clear. That's not Obama.
That was all right.
Let me be clear.
Let me be clear.
Kermit the Frog was the president.
Let me be clear.
As David is honest.
There's a cat in Iraq. Oh, I don't
know. Anyway,
it's not right. Can you do an American?
Have you ever had to do an American for an acting thing, Ashley?
I've done lots of auditions where I've been like, hey there, my name's Ashley. Oh, no, I can tell you the time I did an American accent was I used to do free voiceovers for people's fiction and do audio versions of it online for people. And one of them was a lesbian vampire story from Louisiana. And it's somewhere on the internet. And it's me doing this really bad Louisiana accent. And it's like filth.
That's
do your thing. Get that link in the comments. Do you know, I just remembered this. Did I not audition for you once for something? I think, but it was Sharon Rooney, I think, was in it as well.
No.
And you, I can't remember, if you, but I thought you had something to do with it because it was in Yes Bar we auditioned. I think, did you go for it as well?
What was it for?
I can't even really remember, but it was something.
I've never worked with Sharon.
No,
she's
have
just
you
a
not?
Pal.
Right. Aye, maybe it was...
What was the role? What?
I can't remember. It was something that maybe she was in or something. I can't remember what it was.
Did you think I was there?
No, but I just had a vague memory of that because I think I remember speaking to you after it or something, but...
Maybe we both auditioned for
that
something.
That might have been what it was, actually.
Because you auditioned for the pilot of Dinosaur.
That's right.
To play my uncle.
That's right. That's right, yeah. Didn't know if you'd know about that.
Steve gets cast like about 20 years out of his age range. Like,
Graham,
I know.
We literally had a conversation last night where we were like, if we get a season two, we need to get a part for Stevie in it.
Amazing, I'll do it. 100%.
You would have been good as the brother. He would have been good as the brother. That guy's good though, that's the brother.
Yeah, David
Carlyle was
amazing.
Really good, isn't it?
Because the uncle thing was, they said that you had to play younger and older. So it was like when originally when you were meant to be a wee girl and then it would be an uncle and then when
but that would have been so weird.
Did Steve go for the same part as Greg Hemphill? Playing your dad.
I don't think we even auditioned that. Greg had auditioned for another part and then I had saw him and I was like, if that's an option, can he play my dad?
Oh, 100%. Just send them the Still Game DVDs. Like, I want this guy.
What other part did he play?
He auditioned for the part of the guy at the museum, the smarmy guy.
Aye, sure.
The boss?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Nah, he's...
No, he's perfect as that. But he came to my school when I was 18 and did a talk.
Aye.
Really?
And it was like the most magical thing in the world because I went to this very elite private school in the south side of Glasgow called Hutchie that I hated. And I think I was...
That's where the fucking first ministers come from?
Yeah, all of them. And I worked in a chip shop, so I was the only person who like... worked in a chip shop after my school. So I had like a little chip shop tabard that I would take with me. And everybody was really horrible. And he came and he did this talk and he had still game scripts. And he said, does anybody want to come and read a wee bit? And I was like, and I went off and he went, what's your name? And I said, Ashley Story. And I remember the rugby team being like, Ashley Story, because I had a scummy voice compared to them. And then I read the little bit of script and it was Isa. And I did that, you know, that wee old woman voice that I do. And everybody laughed. And it was the first time they'd ever laughed at anything I'd done. And he was like, oh, kid, if you want a job when you leave school, you can come to me. Amazing. And it was like, I felt like I was flying. And so when I got the opportunity, I was like, I want Greg Hemphill in this.
Oh, and so good.
We had breakfast the day before we started filming. He's like, imagine I'd been a cunt to you.
I know, and funny enough, you're fucking getting him a job now.
That's amazing. Did he remember that?
Yeah.
It's a real full circle moment. That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, he's great. I love Greg.
Yes. So we should probably say, actually, so you are here to promote Dinosaur, which is your new sitcom on the BBC.
Yeah.
And Hulu.
And Hulu.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. How are you feeling about it?
I feel like I'm with vomit. I have been a notorious underdog my entire career and I've loved it very much. You get away with so much shite when you're an underdog. And now everybody's looking at me like, do something. I'm like, I can't.
Well, before we get into that, because you're talking about there, like that thing with Greg in school, but did you not start stand up when you were like a kid, basically?
11.
That's crazy.
What do you talk about when you're 11?
I did. It was all so inappropriate. It was all so inappropriate.
Was it written by you?
Yeah.
Just using the still game scripts?
It was worse. It was so bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you remember any of the stuff you were saying?
I would like do jokes about Barbie, which is now like, you can't do that because everybody fucking loves Barbie again. But when I was a kid...
It'd be relevant. It's become topical once again.
I did jokes about Feng Shui because my dad kept joining cults when I was little.
Really?
But he wasn't joining cults because he believed in cults. He would take me to different religious organisations for free food.
Oh, right. So you just go around the houses, go to all of them?
Falun Gong, which is a Chinese practice which is banned in China.
Yeah, they do the dances and all that stuff.
You hold the Wheel of Time.
Aye.
We would go to the Spiritualist Church because they did biscuits and tea. Uh-huh. We would go to the Sikh Temple because they'd do curry. We didn't like Scientology. They had no freebies.
So this is just like going to different restaurants but not needing to pay, basically.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that we were like poor or that poor. It was just my dad loves free stuff. Right. And that was we'd go to like this, like there'd be a Reiki session. It'd be like free tea. My dad'd be like, right, you're getting healed. I'm getting free tea.
Fuck's sake, that's class. I would do that, to be fair. I quite like a wee freebie. Free curry.
Skinflint, Stephen is.
My dad. You know like you go to like Jonglers, I don't know what it's called now, but you'd go to a Jonglers and
it doesn't exist now, it's shut down.
The hen parties and the stag, the glee. The hen parties and stag parties and they have like the t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would go up and ask like the hens if they've got any spare t-shirts because he'd wear it. For like years, he wore a t-shirt with just like a blonde woman wearing a pink cowboy hat. I've got no idea who she is. No. Wore it for years, just cutting about.
I wouldn't do that. I don't think I'd go that far.
Why
would they have spares though?
Because they were like handing them out to people, like, oh, do you want to join our hen party? Right. And he's
like, aye.
Yes.
And he's one of those, like, no, sometimes after a holiday or something, and people, like, you know, they kind of never stop going on about it. He's like that with that hen party, even though he was not on it. He's like wearing the t-shirt for 10 years.
One day he put it in the washing and it just turned completely grey. And he took it out and he went, oh, she must have died.
That sixth sense for that sort of thing.
Or they've divorced. He was like, there's some message behind this.
What did your mum think of your dad wanting about wear a t-shirt with somebody, a woman's face on it?
I don't know. They got married when they were teenagers. And I don't think it's too late now to get divorced. So they put up each other.
So you had a lot of material for when you were 11, basically.
Pretty much.
So where did you perform? What kind of gigs were you doing?
Blackfriars.
So actual State Bar. Gigs?
Yeah, they'd shut the pub so that I could come in. So the bar would get shut because I was underage and I would come in, do my 10, piss off. God. I opened the improv club in London when I was like 12 on its first day with Omid Jalili.
That's insane.
And the worst thing was, is my mum was trying to be a comedian and she wasn't getting any gigs. And I was like this 12-year-old, like,
really?
So this is the start of your mum's career?
She's just at the start of her career, yeah.
All right.
And I was like, oh, I want to be a comedian too, if you're a comedian.
Right, because I thought it would have been like she had a name for herself and you were kind of coming along and doing stuff.
She was just new.
All right, well.
Yeah. Ah. And then I did the Fringe when I was 13, my first Fringe.
A full run?
Yeah.
Fuck's sake. No wonder you don't want to do it anymore. Yeah.
But what was that like? So you'd done a full run at the Fringe, doing an hour every day?
I did an hour show, but it was like part talk show, part stand-up.
Right.
So I did a show called What Were You Doing When You Were 13, where I would interview comedians about what they were doing when they were 13.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of any of this. Really? I have blacked it all out. And I have been to like therapy and they're like, maybe we should dig into that. I'm like, maybe my brain's protecting me. Nah.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to remember whatever bad things happened during that Fringe. Thank you.
Could you not remember your first gig or anything?
No.
I guess it's like when you're a kid, like you just do hundreds of mad stuff and it just all kind of blends into one a wee bit, doesn't it?
So you don't
like,
care.
I know.
Just do it. And then suddenly you hit puberty and you're all self-conscious and like, don't look at me.
Yeah.
But so see, when you went back to stand up as an adult then, how did that kind of influence or affect your sort of relationship to doing stand up?
I don't think it influenced it because I'd been around stand up even though I'd left. Aye. Mum was still a stand up comedian and I'd tour with her, so I'd done, like, looked after her in Adelaide, looked after her in New Zealand and done Glastonbury and worked at festivals and still worked in the periphery of comedy.
Yeah.
And just that all that time watching comedy. You know yourself that stand-up, the best way to learn stand-up is just to watch stand-up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I just, that's all I did for my entire life. I didn't have friends. I didn't fit in anywhere. So my mum would have to take me to Jonglers and I just sit in the back of Jonglers, like, at 15 with Ally McCoist, like...
He used to go to Jonglers all the time.
And then he would, this is dead bad, but he would like leave his drink and I would be like,
well, stealing his drink.
Stealing vodka Red Bulls.
The coist on the body Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. That's amazing.
That's wild. That's a great showbiz stories right there. Off the bat, straight away. Oh, Julie and Ally McCoist.
Oh, no, I've got loads of them. Just all my famous pals. Ally.
Big Ally.
Big Ally.
I like Ally. Ally's a fan of the podcast.
Is he?
Well, no, he's
a fan of Steve.
He likes one or two clips.
Aye, he's like...
Does he love you? Does he know about your wet mouth?
It doesn't know, by the way.
Can we speak about this?
Yes!
Because I just got a flashback to you saying that people were commenting about the wet mouth and you deleted the comments.
Yeah, I did.
Did you think it was me?
No.
we were out
about 2 weeks ago at this thing and you said to me about this. So can you explain what this is?
Way, way, way back when Stephen first started comedy, my mum doesn't remember anybody's names.
No.
And she'd be like, that wee boy with the wet mouth. And I'd be like, who? And she'd be like, the wee boy with the offy wet mouth. He's just constantly swallowing spit.
how do we not know this wasn't CMB?
Because it was you. Because I pointed at you and she was like, I am. And then I just noticed it and I was like, he is always going.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because the thing is, right.
This is,
I wouldn't, this is slander. I didn't even know that could be a thing. And it was, and you said that the other week and I was like, oh my God. Because about a month ago, somebody commented on one of our TikTok videos saying that guy's mouth is so wet or something like that. And I was like, and I looked and I thought, that must be Steve.
Why did you think that?
Because you've got a wee wet mouth.
I don't, I just done
it there.
Do you
know
what?
It's good that you've got a wet mouth. You're like Pavlov's dog.
Just salivating all the time. That's not a good thing. I don't think I've got a wet mouth.
What you meant to do about that?
Nothing. You can't lean into it. This is what I was saying to him. He had to drive me here because... Do people know where you film this?
We try and
keep it under wraps.
They keep under wraps. It's this luxurious studio location in the heart of Glasgow.
Yes.
When he was driving me, I was like, you should become a serial killer and that could be your calling card. It's just like pouring water in people's mouths. The wet mouth murderer.
Just salivate into the mouth.
Because I bullied him too hard about his juicy mouth.
But I never even thought it was a thing, because then I started getting self-conscious, like, oh my God, have I got a wet mouth?
No, you've got another thing.
All right. What does your mum call me? You did once say that I had asymmetrical hair, though. I remember you telling me that. That was fine, yeah. Because I've got a cow's lick. Oh, you know that? I know. That's not something I'm unaware of.
No.
I'd rather that than a wet miss, to be fair.
I'm not getting a TikTok comment. That guy's hair is really asymmetrical.
It's just the things that you notice. And then it's one of my favourite things about you. I'm constantly complimenting you. I'm always telling people you're the best comedian in the world and have a wet mouth.
And that's a, yeah, but...
Do you know how hard it is to do comedy when you've got a wet mouth?
I was saying to him, I was like, you don't have a unique selling point. This could be your autism.
You're not getting a BBC series based off of the fact you've got wet mouth.
It's a great title for a sitcom, Wet Mouth.
Wet Mouth.
Well, it's a big mouth, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then... Wet Mouth. I don't think there's enough people who also have wet mouths that are like, I'm finally being represented.
Guys, get in touch. Do you have a wet mouth and do you want people to know about it and appreciate it? Because you must have to swallow so much more than normal people.
I don't realise it though. Because sometimes I'll get a dry mouth when I'm on stage if I'm nervous. So, but then, like, how do you explain that if it's so wet? How does it go dry? Do you know what I mean? I don't... If it's so wet, how does it go dry? That's what I'm asking.
Ashley plays a scientist in the thing, but she isn't actually one in real life.
No, I play a paleontologist, which is a difficult thing because I struggle with a word specific to...
Here's a question, right? There's a bit in the sitcom, right? Oh. And they went, your character's like going, right, the dinosaur spines, we think that they might be... like we know that that helped them... like live or whatever, uh-huh. But they might have had another purpose.
Yeah.
How based on scientific fact is that, or is that just something made up?
No, it's like I did so much research on dinosaurs, and I'm so disinterested in it, and I don't care. Mainly, what I looked up was how big are dinosaur penises, and then tried to put that in it, and they were like, you can't talk about T Rex is 10 foot cock. Sorry,
because it's about.
I would imagine the dick would be small like the hands.
Well, there's a debate. It's like an actual scientific debate. It's there's a huge range from like 6 foot to like 3 inches. Nobody knows.
I mean, imagine you had a 3-inch dick when you're a T-Rex. Oh. That's so good.
It'd be tough.
They also have to fuck in the sea.
Oh.
Because they're so heavy, they might crush each other. So some dinosaurs would have to go into the water to have sex.
That's cool.
I've done that once in Ianapa, but it wasn't as fun as you would think.
Did you think you were going to crush someone?
No. For different reasons, it was not the same intention.
Was she tiny?
not problematically so. Did dinosaurs have wet mouths? Is that...
That's season two. That's going to be Stephen Buchanan's character as a scientist who's just focused on the wetness of dinosaurs' mouths.
I was inspired to get into dinosaurs after I knew that they were just like me.
Well, they might have... Some animals have, like, poisonous saliva. I think that's, like... Is that not a thing? So maybe...
Again, I'm not a scientist.
You know about this. You've done the research. I'm sure that's a thing. Like, if you're like allergic to cats, it's usually the saliva rather than the hair and stuff.
Oh, is it?
So if you get the wee spit on you, so maybe...
Maybe that's...
I mean, I don't know
why... Do you let a lot of cats lick you? Is that why you've got a wet mouth? Is this like when Batman that's like another... got bit by a bat or something?
It's deceiving because cats have wee dry tongues, but they've got really wet mouths. So maybe I'm like a cat. I'm like a cat.
Yeah, like, I guess it's Steve's once famously described.
No, I can see it. I can feel it.
I was described by another comedian in a green room as a cat that can't get comfortable.
Bruce?
Yeah. He's like a little cat that can't get comfortable.
Oh, that should be a game you play. Just quotes from comedians and guess who said it.
That is a good game, eh? Do you think of any others?
Jenny said you have got a wet
mouth. Well, did they know that?
Oh, she adores you though.
That's nice.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, no, I'll get that right.
He lived too near us for a while and we didn't like that.
Oh really? Did you see him out?
Oh, he
doesn't know that I have really good hearing. And so he lived around the corner from me, and when he would see me on the street, he would whisper to his then girlfriend, "Oh, it's Ashley Story," and I would hear them and I'd be like,
"No, surely not." Yeah. Really?
And I'd be like, "Great."
How good is your hearing? How close was it?
Yeah. Like far away. I've got I hate my hearing.
Like
I
a wish cat
I didn't
as well.
Like a cat. I wish I didn't have good hearing, but it's like an autism thing.
It makes it look as though he's not here on purpose now, by
the way. Yeah, it does. It really does. I'm like,
He'd have been here last week.
I know, I'm so sorry. Do you know why I couldn't do it?
No, but we generally, these couches would have been in the pavilion still.
All good.
If we'd done it last Monday morning.
Because yeah. I was on standby for...
Weakest link. We had Ian Stirling in the afternoon. He was going on the afternoon one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, Grado cancelled it 10 times because he was in fucking the standby for Weakest Link.
So it's my favourite show. I need to do it.
I just love standby work. I've been on standby for so many different things and it's money for free. I love it.
Yeah. I done it for Dog Ate My Homework.
I did it for House of Games. Oh, for like 3 years.
That would be good.
Yeah.
I'd like to get on.
I know. I get asked if I would like to be on standby for it, and I didn't even make the cut for that.
You're standby for the standbys.
Aye, no, I was. So generally,
it's a bit of a nightmare. You have to have like 5 outfits ready to go because they film 5 episodes in a day.
Right enough.
But surely you could just. I mean, I guess you can. Can you just? I mean, if you'd done the podcast, could you just be like, I need to leave right now? And go
no, because they need me. The reason why I'm on standby is because I live close to where they film it. So if I'm in where this place is, I won't be able to. Yeah, I would be too far away.
Okay,
fair enough. So you went back to stand up as an adult then, obviously after doing it as a kid. And so you just kind of, was it just basically like starting from scratch again then for you, would you say?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Stand up.
Did you ever try and do some of the same jokes? Was it like too
weird?
Am I right?
But it was like kind of, you said it was a bit inappropriate for a 13-year-old or whatever. So could you have done it?
No, because it would have still been inappropriate. It was really inappropriate.
Really?
Yeah. I've always been a fan of inappropriate jokes since I was like 5. I remember the first one I ever made was me and my mum. I realised that penises look like sausages and I brought this up constantly and I just would drop this knowledge repeatedly. Like, if I saw somebody eating a sausage, I'd be like, penis. I just don't know.
It's a good bit.
It's a good bit. And I remember we went into, my mum took me to a leisure centre and we opened the door to the sauna and I was like 5 and there was these 6 guys all sitting, there was no women, and I went, it smells like sizzling sausages in here, and my mod died for laughter. It was like...
That's like your first main bit that you... Did you do that on stage?
No, I'm just trying to avoid what I did on stage because it was so inappropriate.
I could see that working on stage.
Yeah.
I remember the first inappropriate joke I ever told. Mm-hmm. It was to my mum and dad. And no, that way it's like... I didn't think I really understood what the joke was, but it was after Princess Diana died, right? And I must have heard it in school. And it was, I remember sitting at the dinner table with my mom and dad.
I'm so scared about where this is going.
No, it was literally like, I was like, Mum, Dad, what's the difference between Princess Diana and Tiger Woods? Tiger Woods has got a better driver,
oh,
right?
No.
I must have heard that in school.
Did you understand that?
I don't even think I knew that a driver was a hanging golf. But I just say that because I've heard it. And then Mum and Dad are like, oh, no. But I must, you know, I mean, you just pick these things up and then that's...
I remember seeing a Princess Diana joke when I was a kid that was a great comedian's joke, and it was that his da had misheard the news and went, that bastard Pavarotti's killed Princess Diana because he got Pavarotti and paparazzi mixed up.
Pavarotti's always invading my privacy. So Dinosaur is out now. Yeah. Oh, well, be by the time this is it. Mm-hmm. Dinosaur out now, 6 episodes. I remember when the pilot was on.
Yes.
And it was like a kind of, I feel like a lot of the pilot kind of had condensed what's in the series kind of thing. Mm. Is that right?
The pilot was written by Matilda Curtis, very talented. I got cast in it just as an actor, and it's very different. It's like it's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
And then when it got picked up for a series after like 2 years of nothing, we like rewrote it all.
Yeah. So did you write it in conjunction with Matilda and stuff like that?
After it got commissioned, as a series. But the pilot I had nothing to do with. I just read my lines and.
So how come they changed it so much? Was it?
I think originally it was written for an English girl.
Yeah.
And then it got moved to Scotland. And then it was, they wanted more of an authentic autistic voice writing it. Matilda has family who are autistic, but she's not on the spectrum. And it was like just a more authentic. Also, Matilda's like an amazing drama and that kind of, they wanted more gaggies.
Yeah.
So I was like, yay.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, comparing the pilot to the this first episode, it's a lot funnier and not in a bad way. Like, they felt like the first one was like more of a drama, comedy drama, but this is like an out and out comedy.
More on the side of comedy for sure.
I felt like you're acting in it as well. You're so much more you in the series, whereas in the pilot it was maybe like slightly different. But I felt like you really like your authentic self kind of came across a lot in the series.
So what was
that like then? Kind of that process of putting together the scripts and stuff like that, and also like just sort of, I suppose part of it is I suppose trying to shine a light on the experience of like an autistic person and try to, I guess, make people who are not neurodivergent or whatever understand what it's like for people with autism and things like that. Is that right? Or
I think it's just like, you'll know yourself that your best bits of comedy come from like being really honest and like really true, authentic things are the funniest types of things. Mm-hmm. So that was like my first thought always was like, this is going to be funny because it's real.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was like, how can, I don't want it. I think sometimes people write about autism and they write about what they think autism is because it's a big, big, big spectrum. There's lots of different things. And I ain't going to write about somebody else's experience because I don't want to get it wrong. I can only tell my experience and then other people can relate to that how they like. And I think that's the best kind of place to come from. And that was the main objective.
Totally. Yeah. I thought it was quite funny. And I think it was one of the first or second episode. And Evie and its partner, who she's the fiancé, says when your character brings up having autism, you're like, don't say it. And he's like, it's a superpower.
Yeah.
Is that a thing that people just say all the time?
Yes, it makes me insane. Fern Brady's got the best like response to it. She says, like, unless Marvel are making a film about a woman who talks at you for 3 hours about Sylvia Plath, it ain't a superpower. But it's like that. It's not a superpower.
No, Wet Mouth Boy would be a much better superpower.
Just drown everyone.
That, I thought that because we had Fern on talk about a book and stuff like that as well, like a wee while ago, and obviously she talks about her experience of autism and stuff like that. And that I thought what was really interesting in Dinosaur was there's the episode where you meet Sanjeev Kohli plays Evie's fiance's dad in it, and it's like obviously he's quite kind of posh guy and everybody's dead worried. But for me, that whole episode kind of was like, almost was showing that, you know, because there's that term masking, isn't there, for autism? Like, you need to kind of mask to try and appear, like, you know,
normal
I suppose. But then it's like, I think that in that episode really comes across how much all of us do that to an extent.
Yeah.
To lie, to try and, you know,
impress
a, you know, father-in-law or somebody that's, say, a different class or whatever.
It's just, I think that's, you know, that's the rub into it, is we're all pretending. And I think that if you can kind of apply, you know, the times, the feelings of you've had as a neurotypical person, but you know the times you've had where you've kind of had to hide who you are to impress somebody or be good or to do a thing, then you kind of can apply that and empathise with somebody with autism, because that's what we are doing all the time.
Yeah.
That's there every day. That's like every day going to school, I had to be like, how? And I, at the time, I didn't know I had autism, so I just thought everybody was getting up and being like, how do I do this? I'm going to try and be normal. And that's why I kind of hate green rooms and comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's just awkward.
Aye. Yeah. It's always an awkward mix of people, I would say, in green rooms. And like, I remember when I first started stand-up and like, I was on my first Red Raw or something, and I went in and I'm expecting everybody like cracking jokes and this and that, right?
Yeah.
And then you realise it's just a bunch of awkward strangers.
Yeah.
None of them are really comedians, basically, anyway. Yeah. And then so everyone's just sitting back nervously and I was like, oh God, this isn't quite what I expected. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's so weird.
Because we were discussing that, like, whenever, if we've done like a weekend in Newcastle and you're like, you just want to just sit in your hotel room. You kind of be arsed up walking about yourself or hanging about with the weirdos that you're on with, like that weekend or whatever.
Yeah,
I know. You know, you don't want to impose too much on someone else. If like, what are you doing tomorrow afternoon? Like, that's none of your fucking business.
Going to sit in my room for 4 hours watching my laptop.
I've actually got to the point where I now think it's bad form, so I never ask anyone. Like, see, if you did the Friday gig and then you did the Saturday gig, I never say to MD, what did you go up to today?
Yeah, don't. Yeah.
I just don't.
It's so rude. Yeah. And the older comedians are always like, oh, you should get out. You should go in. I'm like, go away.
I know.
Leave me alone.
thing is, as well, like when you go back to the same cities, it's like, aye, right, I went down to the fucking, you know, the quay and I seen the fucking museum.
Uh-huh.
I'm just, you know, I've been here 5 times now. I'm just going to sit in my room and fucking chill out.
Yeah, exactly. And I try and just get the last train home from Newcastle.
That joy of if you're Newcastle, doing the opening slot on the Newcastle stand and you can get home that night.
I remember like I was doing Edinburgh and then Newcastle, and I got home for Newcastle earlier than for Edinburgh, and I was like,
yeah,
this is great. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but I do miss though. I remember doing like a Thursday to Saturday, and you would stay the 3 nights, and I actually quite enjoyed that. But it's long. It's long.
It is a long weekend. They don't do the Thursdays anymore.
No, I know. It's a shame.
Comedy's dying.
How would you find life on the road and stuff like that and travelling about, Ashley? Do you mind it?
I was saying to Stephen in the car when we drove to the Glasgow City Centre.
Yeah. We're here at G4 Studios or whatever the fuck they call it.
When we drove to Pacific Quay.
Yes. Yeah, this is actually in BBC Scotland Studios. Thanks very much for recreating our entire entire setup.
This is actually the 9. Nobody
knows. I know. There's more people watch it.
Not a lie. When I used to do, do you know that I did Frozen?
What?
When I did Frozen.
Oh, right, aye.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Yeah, about
Was it on a cruise ship or something?
What
was it?
I did sing along of Frozen, and I would tour around the whole of Scotland and the north of England just constantly doing
a live show,
the live version of sing along of Frozen.
Wow.
With two princesses. And I was like, you know, the shopkeeper in Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, whoa, books on my blog.
Is that you?
No, because like, because I was the only person who spoke legally, I had to create my own character for every show that wasn't part of the script. So I was his cousin for Scotland.
So you're the only person that's speaking, not singing?
Yeah. Right. So they didn't sing, they would just mime.
Are you narrating it then? No.
So they... The film, I would go on for 20 minutes and be like, hello, boys and girls.
Doing your stuff when you're 13.
Sausages.
Bye, size Barbie. What's the girl to do with so much plastic? That was an actual joke.
Nice, we teased that out eventually.
I would go on and I would do like, teach them how to do the first time in Forever Dance. And I would get them to like sing and like vocalise and shout and stuff so that they all felt comfortable, because we'd be in massive theatres with like hundreds and thousands of people and get them all to scream and wake up their mums and dads, because it was usually like a Saturday morning, and I'd be like, who's had a late night lemonade? And the mums and dads would all be staring at me like, we hate you, this costs like 40 quid, I hate you. And then the princesses would come out and they would meet the princesses and Anna and Elsa, and then the film would start and I would sit at the side of the stage and sort of be like, okay, boys and girls, it's time to get out your clicky clackers because Sven's running. And then they would click clack for Sven running. And then I'd just throw in jokes because I'd get bored. And then I'd start voicing it over for the parents. And the kids would get so annoyed, but the mums and dads would laugh. So it's like when Anna got frozen, I'd be like, my sister's an ice cube. And just wind up the children.
That's cool. But did you ever like slip in jokes for if you're ready for your fringe, like trying to slip in wee fringe jokes and stuff, trying out stuff?
At the opening, I would like do pop culture jokes. Like, do you remember when Madonna got choked on a cape?
And she fell back?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I would do that to Elsa. For a lol.
To the actual actress.
Yeah, yeah. But she would be, we would like have bits because they were bored as well.
Yeah.
We were doing this like 3 times a day for like 4 days a week. Every week.
Yeah.
And it was so boring. And it was so rubbish.
Good money though.
Yeah, it's all right money. But we were on, like, I was constantly in hotels. There's a clip somewhere, because when we did Bradford, the Bradford Hotel is right beside the Bradford High Crown Court.
Mm-hmm.
And some footballer was getting done for something in that court, and I came out in my full Hulk pajamas to have a cigarette, and I didn't know what was going on. And my mum was like, I saw you in the background of the news. Like,
I'd look as though it's like a protest or something about it. It's like, you know, when somebody stands outside dressed like a chicken or whatever.
Yeah, no. Just me, knackered, hungover, with the princesses.
We've always said that this show is about men's mental health.
Of course.
This is a men's mental health podcast.
Have you talked about sitting in an ice bath? Because that seems to be the main cure for men's mental health right
not
now.
Done it yet.
I've done it recently.
Have you?
Yeah.
And was it cure? Better than therapy?
I don't know, I've never been.
But we'll literally sit in a bath of ice
rather than talk about what's wrong with me.
It was too cold for me. I only lasted a few seconds.
Is your men's mental health cured though?
I think it's fine, I don't have it anymore. No mental health whatsoever.
I've never done an ice bath.
No?
I get too cold.
Have you done therapy?
Maybe you shouldn't.
I've not done therapy either.
Your mouth is over.
I've done CBT, does that count?
Cock and ball torture.
Cognitive Somebody jammed your balls in a door. You went, that's me better.
Do wonders for your men's mental health, that?
Not cock and ball torture. Was it
cognitive behavioural therapy?
Oh.
And did it help?
Oh, I was just like, it's a shite.
Just trying something out.
I was like, you're right. It was just
what
annoying.
Happens, isn't it? What do you do?
You're just right in a wee diary. It's like, oh, what makes you feel anxious? And then you write about it. And then you're like, that's your cured.
I don't think that's how it works, but okay.
Well, that's what it felt like.
Stephen, I feel anxious about my wet mouth.
Everyone keeps saying I've got a wet mouth. What does it mean?
Get a bucket and a mop. That's a wet ass Stevie.
Apparently it was health anxiety that I had. Oh, I was always scared about I'm going to die.
Yeah, same. But then I found out that everything we eat, touch and buy is cancer ridden. Yeah. So yeah,
exactly.
As soon as I was like, oh, Teflon pans aren't killing me, great.
Aye, apparently big Teflons.
Big Teflon killing us all.
That is, eh? You should go with steel pans.
Is that right?
Or cast iron. That's what I use, a cast iron skillet.
I'm going to need to get one.
That's dinosaur money, that cast iron skillet.
Absolutely not. I got it out a little.
Bye, so you done up for it with Roscoe and Chris, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Just looked like a lot of fun. Just looked like these were all, aye.
It was a lot of fun, but it was super tiny crew. It was just me, Paul, my radio producer, Paul Bridges, mm-hmm. aka Silent Paul, and like Struan. That was it.
Aye.
And what, like doing everything? Like
they did everything.
Audio.
They mic'd us, they filmed it, they edited, they produced it, they did everything. And then me, Christopher and Roscoe would just dick about.
See, that's BBC Scotland money.
I think people would get a shock if they realised how like small these crews and all that were that go into these shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, when I went to film Dinosaur, I was like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck?
Because there's so many more people?
Because it was just, there was health and safety. There was forms and shit. And I was like, usually I just get flung in a cow field and told go milk a cow, and I'm like, okay.
I'd be just more interested about so writing for the show and then and acting in it and stuff like that. So like,
what was the process with that? Because you wrote it with Matilda,
yeah,
and is she based in London? Is that right?
We did a load of writers' rooms where I'd go down to the two brothers' offices and sit in there, and we would like, essentially, we would beat out the whole 6-episode arc and have like A story, B story, C story for every episode, and kind of work out where you want everything to go. And then once that's all kind of set down, then you write scripts based off of like the plan you've already made for each episode. So by that point there was like a layout for each episode, and then Matilda wrote 1, 2, I wrote 3. And then a girl called Kat and a girl called Robin worked on 4, 5, 6.
Right, okay.
With Matilda.
Yeah.
So you would like write your own episode rather than write the same episode together, or would you like take a pass?
I wrote my own episode 3, and then I took passes on all the episodes just before we went. Well, I took passes on 3 of the episodes before we got to filming, and then during filming, if like Greg was like, I don't like this line, I would like rewrite it. On the set, on the hoof.
Aye.
Right.
And I suppose with your own lines and stuff like that as well, you could sort of maybe put it more in your voice and this kind of stuff.
More in my voice, but also like just if I thought something funny. Like the Danny who plays Rinesh is so funny.
Aye.
So funny. And he would pull stuff out and I'd be like, I really want to react to this. And I want to like...
Some of the reactions in it from like the first episode when you first meet him are so funny. It was like him saying all these mad stuff and you're just like trying to not like... call him a cunt, but it felt like, yeah, which was really funny.
But it's like the line when he's like, how do you even know you're alive? And then I'm like, because you're breathing. That was just something I said, like, because I couldn't hold it in. I was like, because you're breathing.
And then, that is very something you would say. Yeah.
And that got kept in. And there's just lots of that. There's lots of weird physical jokes as well. That's the thing that you don't write down. There's like a bit where Danny does like this thing to Kat's face, and he got that from Face Off, and it's like a reference to Face Off. And then there's also a bit in the first episode where I'm doing like, you can't see me.
I was wondering if that was the John Cena thing when you done that. the bowling bit, and you go,
And then there's a weird hidden, it's not a hidden joke, but it's just for me. There's a joke in episode 3 where he talks about butt stuff. Uh-huh. And then for the rest of the episode, I cover my butt whenever I'm near him.
That's funny.
But you would only know if I told you.
I never noticed that.
No, because
it's
just me being a dick.
That's great. The wee old guy that works with you in the office.
Yeah.
Just reminded me. I was like, that could be Raymond Mearns. Easy peasy. I thought like if he could have been cast as that guy was really good.
Yeah. I love Mearnsy. I constantly want to write stuff for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that he's one of the most funny, talented. I just love how he knows so much about so much shite. How you edited him was so funny. With just the proletariat. Yeah. I love him so much.
You couldn't just sum him up with one thing. It's just got to show the whole
the lesson to the stage.
An immediate
and terrifying.
I'm so glad he's been able to bring that up with the live show. I was trying to get that in at some point, I just forgot.
But yeah, I wanted him in it, but Jim Kitson, who plays Declan, is also autistic. So it was like important to have also representation of other neurodiverse actors and actresses.
Totally.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, it's great. I really loved it, and well worth checking out, guys. 100%. You can get it on iPlayer in the UK.
It's going to be, I think it's the 14th it's on BBC Scotland, the 16th on BBC Three, and the 19th on BBC One.
Nice. Don't know why I didn't plug in them, we'll get them later, but...
I was like, what have we done?
No.
Sweet!
What I was meant to say as well, it's even cool that it's all shot in Glasgow as well.
Because like you were saying, the pilot did feel like it wasn't written really for Glasgow, but there was... Because it was even like, I don't know if I'm making this up, but there was like... They're like, oh, down by the river, and then it was like walking along River Kelvin or something. Like it, the geography didn't make sense of it, and I was like,
yeah,
it didn't seem like it was written by a Scottish
also
person.
That was filmed like in lockdown, so there was only so much we could do and only so many places we could go, and it was like they essentially took out the Grosvenor Hotel because it was shut, so they just booked out the Grosvenor Hotel, and the whole cast, crew, everybody was just bubbled in there, and then we would go out and film and then go back to the Grosvenor Hotel.
That would have been weird filming during like COVID.
It was mad, and it was a lot of testing, a lot of like...
Because were you like quite anxious during COVID as well, in terms of I'm going to die and all this?
I got so fat during COVID that I was like, just from like panic eating, constantly just panic eating and not leaving the house, that I knew it got bad when I got like stuck in my desk chair. And I was like, fuck, I need to buy a new desk chair or go on a diet. I'm not sure which. I did both. But it was bad. But yeah, just being able to like put that sort of authentic Scottishiness in it. And I think one of the things for me, and I mean no disrespect to my forefathers, but something that's always bothered me about Scottish telly and film is the Scottish telly film voice.
Yeah.
That's not like how we talk.
Yeah.
But it's us trying to talk better so that English people can understand us.
Yeah.
100%. And I just decided no.
Aye.
And so I feel like Dinosaur has a lot more of a naturalistic sound.
Yeah.
Like people sound like how they sound.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that was like, everybody agreed. That was, I was really lucky them, because Hulu, who are based in America, were like, okay, do it. Do it like that.
Yeah. And I guess it, for them, if because they're American, they might have said like, no, we want this to be really
clear,
over the top Scottish, so we can understand it.
But they did, they were very generous with understanding that that's not actually our language or our life.
Yeah.
You know, like, ooh, rip-de-doo. And that was a big fight as well. It was just, I was constantly fighting against Scottish stereotypes.
Well, there's none of the Scottish cringe that I suppose is what they talk about. But no, just it does all come across really naturally. It's funny to talk about the accent actually, because I thought at one point I really noticed the last two plays Evie, yous were chatting, and she sounded dead like you.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a really interesting choice, because like, if yous are sisters, obviously yous would sound the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you watch the pilot, none of us had the same accent.
Aye.
My brother, my sister was played by an English girl doing a Glasgow accent. Yeah. My brother was played by a great actor called Brad, but not Glaswegian. So it was a very odd thing, and that's something that bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
And when we did the series, that was like really cool. It was just everybody did kind of we sound like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that Sanjeev was like a mad English guy in it. And usually it's like an English guy playing a Scottish person. So I was like, you noticed that?
Yeah. You enjoyed that?
I was like, yes!
That was a very deliberate move. Yes.
There's also a good bit in the last episode, and it's like just Greg and Sanjeev kicking about. I'm like, this is just fucking Victor and the
Beatles. I know. That was so nice. We filmed the big engagement party dinner on like the day of the 25th anniversary or the 20th anniversary of like the launch of Still Game.
Wow.
And that was very cool.
Nice wee moment there, eh?
And Sally was great as well. Your mum in it.
Yeah.
She
AKA Scarlett.
Scarlett for River City. We done a short film with Niamh, the director of Dinosaur, the other week, and she was in it. She's great. She's so good.
She's so mad. I love her so much.
She's amazing.
She will have pictures of you on her phone.
What do you mean?
That's her favourite thing, is to just sneakily take photographs of people, and then she'll like send it to you one day and be like, I took this one and you weren't really looking, and it'll be some picture where you're like,
snipers coming down the roof. Such a wet myth.
I've drawn my specs, hold on.
There's the episode that he's got to Rothsay as well. What was that like to go and film there?
It was a dream, Mark.
Did you have to stay there then?
Yeah, I used to work in Rothsay.
Did you?
Yeah, my uncles all went. It's where all dodgy gangstery guys went.
I see.
In the old days. And so I used to go there when I was a teenager and work in my Uncle George's pub that was the... They called it the Esplanade. I now know that word is pronounced Esplanade. And that we were saying it wrong my whole life. But I used to work in the bar there and stay there at weekends. And I loved it. And there used to be an arcade. I don't know if it's still there, but there was an arcade under the restaurant, the hotel. And it had a claw machine that you could win watches out of, right? And I was like... so good at this machine. Like I was a savant at this claw machine. And I used to clear it like all the time. My uncle would give me 20 quid and go win all the watches, and then I'd bring them back and all the old guys in the pub would get watches and they'd be delighted.
Were you selling them?
Pretty much. And then I got banned by the guy who owned the arcade from playing the watch machine because I was too good at it. And I told everybody this story before we got to Rothsay, and they were like, all right, cool.
You're like in a Scottish version of Rain Man here, basically.
Let's not draw comparisons that are problematic, Mark.
I mean, it's literally you get banned for a fucking casino.
Many people have been banned for playing things they're good at, not just an offensive portrayal of autism.
Fuck's sake, Jennings.
This is life imitating art, that's what I'm saying.
I know. The Rain Man a claw machine. I've already got enough weird stuff attached to me. Anyway, nobody believe me. We get to Rothsay. We go to the pub where we're filming, and the wee guy who owns the pub comes out and he's like, I know you. And he's like, and he was the guy who owned the arcade, and he was like, you're the watch girl, I remember you. And I was like,
you're still bad.
And then we sang Ronan Keating's When You Say Nothing at All together. Amazing. Just impromptu.
I went to Rossi last year on the Waverley. You ever been in the Waverley?
No, because I'm not an elderly woman.
Yeah, it was just full of
old
people.
Is that not what you took? You must have took that boat over because you're on a wee ferry thing.
Ferry. Yeah. The Waverley's different.
The Waverley's like a booze cruise for 90-year-olds.
Have you never heard of the... You must have seen it on the river.
I didn't know Rothsay was an island in it.
It's the island. Rothsay's the town.
Oh, right.
But
okay.
When working class Scottish people used to go there for their holidays before like Tenerife was an option.
Aye.
And so they would go to Rothsay for their summer holidays. Oh, that was it. And it was like palm trees and mini golf and history. And a lot of my family who have addiction problems go there to... Right.
Play the claw machines.
Yeah, play the claw machines.
You're not going to go over there, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. It's really weird. I've got a weird contingent of like ex-con family who kind of live near or around that island.
Yeah. Can we talk about this?
No. Yeah, if you want.
Because like your mum talks about it and her stand-up and all that, like, yeah. From a sort of gangstery background.
Yeah.
Is that what's
I mean,
that
between
like
between your mum and that, it must have been an interesting upbringing, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's not been easy. I used to, my granddad was a criminal of the organised variety.
Right.
I adored him. I didn't know what he did. And he had 7 sons and he was like just really weird and did a lot of crime and that. And he used to take me about with him. And
on the crime?
No, just things? Like when he was doing meetings, there was a lot of meetings with other criminals. Again, I'm 6, so I don't know what's going on. But I remember going to like the Ponderosa with my granda when I was little.
That just sounds so...
Sounds like some of the...
It was Arthur Thompson's house.
Right.
That they called it the Ponderosa. And
Arthur Thompson,
The gangster.
The gangster.
Because, that's his work, so that's...
Yeah. He just went to his house?
He went to his house to talk about something, and I think he brought me because he knew nothing bad would happen if a 5-year-old was there.
Right.
I think. I don't know.
And then that's you came in and go, this smells like sizzling sausages.
So you're like a human shield to them?
Like, more than once.
Oh, fucking hell.
Wow. And it was fine. It wasn't bad. But the police, like, raided us and found loads of guns in my granddad's house and Jesus. My parents got taken away and I got sent to go, like, I got passed around the aunties and there was a big fight over who got me.
And that must have felt nice.
Yeah, it was cool. and I had to, like, phone the lawyer and there was, like, I had plans in place, which, again, I don't know how I didn't know I was autistic, but I had, like, Mr. Bovey, RIP, my lawyer, I had his name written on a panda bear on its butt so that I knew, like, to phone that number if something went wrong. And the bear was called Mr. Bovey, so I knew to phone Mr. Bovey if that went wrong. And that's I had cool. The hidden keys for all the booze that was hidden in my granddad's house. And that I now realise as an adult that that's why all the aunties were fighting over me, was that I had...
the keys to the booze?
I had the keys to the booze. I had the keys to the basement where all the like... wealth was hidden, and so they were like, oh, just get a wee. And I remember my auntie going, I'm awfully thirsty, actually. Go get me a wee drink. And I came back with an ice pole, like, there you go. Like, I'm not giving you the key to the booze cupboard.
Wow.
That's amazing.
What age would you have been when you started to realise kind of that this wasn't the most normal upbringing?
I knew that it wasn't normal because I was told not to tell things at school. That was like a big thing. I was 5 and I was told, don't talk about your granda's like 20-year-old girlfriend. Right. At school, don't talk about like your uncle
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Don't talk. The other thing I knew was this was if I got told an uncle was in Spain, it meant they were in jail.
Right.
And so when I went to private school and these girls were like, yes, my dad's in Spain, I was like, oh, is he in jail?
We probably know each other.
Do you know if you lie and say that you're a trained electrician, you get more time out your cell? Tell your mother. It was a weird upbringing. I was going to this really elite private school in the West End of Glasgow while I was like going back to the East End where it was all like crimey and across the road my Uncle Jonah lived. He wasn't my actual uncle. He was just this guy who lived across the road from us and he had no eyes because both had been taken in like gang violence. But I thought that's how all blind people became blind when I was a little girl, that somebody had like taken their eyes. So mum had to like stop me from repeatedly asking blind people, who took your eyes?
Well, God in a way for some of us, I suppose.
Fucking hell, when did you become Mark the Edgelord?
I'm saying that it happened.
But his house was always getting set on fire. That's what I remember most is like...
Your grandpa's?
No, that burned down like last week. My Jonah was...
The guy with no eyes?
Yeah.
So even when he had no eyes, he was still doing stuff that people would want to do stuff like burn down his house
for? If you Google him, he was called like Cyclops when he had one eye. And he was like Blind Jonah and he was like a notorious, I think, enforcer or hitman... of that variety. I just knew him as the guy who lived across the road whose house went on fire, who had a daughter my age, and I would go and play there. And Yeah, but then I grew up and I googled stuff and I was like, fuck, that was parenting, eh?
That's insane.
So forgive me if this sounds insensitive, right?
Oh my God, no way, so, from Mark.
But see, because of that upbringing, like, so do you think it maybe took you longer to realise your autism or to look for a diagnosis because you thought, oh, well, I've just had a weird...
Yeah. 100%. That's not insensitive. 100%. I thought, oh, I've just got trauma and weird stuff from all the weird stuff that happened to me when I was little.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Which completely makes sense.
Yeah. But then when I went for a diagnosis, it was almost like, yeah, why would you think you didn't? Like, it was like, yeah, hardcore, mate.
And what was it that made you kind of pursue the diagnosis and stuff like that? Was it, you said to us off air about the first person that told you they thought you were autistic, and we can say who it is if you want.
It was the first person to say I was autistic. He was the first person to like say it out loud in a normal way. Like, right. He was the first person to go, it was Elliot Steele, and like,
previous guest.
And he was like, nah, mate, you're autistic. And it was very nice and very comforting and very assuring. But I just wanted to get diagnosed because I wanted to be able to, either I was, and that would explain a lot of stuff, or I wasn't, and then that would be a worry. Like, maybe I've got a brain tumour or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was panicked about my brain and how it worked. And I knew now that it didn't work the same as other people's brains. And now that I'd, like, especially in comedy, when I would speak to people and they'd be like, no, that's not how I think. And I thought that everything in my head was normal until I said it out loud.
And just for people that might not know, are just interested as well, like, so what kind of stuff did it explain to you about what you're doing? And like, you know, when they say about why didn't you think? So what were the reasons that they said that? What were the specific examples of how it kind of manifests for you? Or
How I talk, how I, like, just the way I talk, specifically the words I use, how I describe things isn't typical. It's kind of odd. I didn't know that. My hands... my jazz hands constantly going, and it's something I'd always like tried to like work on to hold in, especially when I would do like wee bits on telly or something. I'd be constantly aware that I was fidgeting and doing strange hand movements, just like how my brain connects things, pattern recognition. There was a summer I thought I was psychic because I just guessed loads of shit about people, and I didn't know that was just very good at recognising patterns.
What did you guess?
Like, I told this guy at summer camp, I was like, are you adopted? And he was like, yeah, how do you know? I don't know how I knew, but I just knew.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was weird.
Just got like, yeah, you can just, like, it's a perception thing, like, you can just get heightened sense of that, and then...
Like a detective.
Like the mentalist.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And also you're more likely to just say it to the person as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I forgot that bit. Just saying inappropriate shit, like, you've got a wet mouth. I just can't hold it in, and I should, but I just feel compelled to say everything I think.
Yeah, but I think, like, I got this impression when I read Fern's book and we spoke to her as well, but, like, I think it's, like, one of those things where it's almost like that kind of, we spoke about that as well, the Emperor's New Clothes thing of, like, it's kind of like, but you're right, it's not, it's just that I think we all in society kind of get a wee bit used to these wee white lies and no saying what we really thinking on that sort of stuff, and then you're just there going, no, but this is this, and everybody knows this is this, why isn't no everybody saying it kind of thing?
Yeah, and it's really, there was like times, I'm not going to repeat it, but there's times in comedy where there was things going on and nobody was talking about it, and then I talked about it, and I was the one who said it, and then everybody else was like, and I was like, but we all know it's going on.
Yeah.
We all know it's happening. Why are we all pretending it's not happening? It made no sense to me, and it still doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't, injustice as well is like a big weird thing. I feel like, I think there's a lot of injustice, and it like grinds in my gears, and yeah, I get hung up on it. Plus there's just all the hyperfixation stuff. Like, the amount of like Star Trek.
Well, I was going to say
William Shatner.
Yes, the William Shatner and then cardboard,
like,
cutout.
Yeah, yeah. And then Harry Potter, and like the screeds of Harry Potter fan fiction I've written in my life that are all hidden on a computer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What kind of stories have you got?
Is fan fiction always sexual? I just get that.
I mean, we were all thinking it.
Were we? That was the most wet question you'd asked as well. If you listen back to that, ladies and gentlemen, like, ich fan fiction always shit.
Fuck's sake.
Aye, I write filth.
Wow. Really? Is it always sexual though?
Aye, it's not always sexual. For other people, for me, yeah. I just really enjoy writing smut and I enjoy reading smut. I read an awful lot of it and it's like my therapy.
Do you put it out? Have you put it online and stuff?
There is certain accounts on the internet.
Really?
That people will never
burner
find.
Burner accounts?
Yeah. But during lockdown, this will never get posted, so I can talk about it during lockdown. I just like became really fixated on writing this in-depth, not sexy in the slightest, very technical fan fiction about how they could film a version of Love Island with Harry Potter characters, but mainly how magic affects cameras.
What do you mean?
In Harry Potter, it states that magic affects electronics, and I just became really, really...
Magic does affect it.
Yeah, that's like, you can't use a phone in Hogwarts. So then I'm like, how am I meant to contact my mum and dad if I get to Hogwarts? Because they don't have a fireplace, and they won't allow an owl in the house. So... I just became, like, really fixated on, like, weird minutia and technicalities and the bureaucracy of the wizarding world.
Yeah. Why do they not allow... why does it affect technology? Surely that seems like it's a...
It's all made up.
I think it's just like... it makes sense that magic would interfere with electronics.
You would think so? Well, fucking electronics affects... fucking get a phone on it, we'll start beeping and fucking micing on
it. I suppose, but also I don't think it would... affect it if they did have phones. Like, they wouldn't be like, oh, Voldemort's coming, let's go quick. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what?
I don't think you... I think you're thinking it'll affect the story. I'm talking about the actual physics of electricity. Eons and protons and neutrons and shit like that.
I don't know about any
I
of
don't
that
know
much.
I'm not a scientist. Are all deeply impacted by the particulars of magic.
Right.
So how would you get a camera to work in that sense?
That's true.
There you go.
So I wrote... I counted it on Grammarly, and it's two Warren pieces.
The
length of two.
You wrote this about, and it's the length.
About.
Just about.
How it magic affects electronics.
No. Just about if Love Island had Harry Potter people on it and it was magic and how that would work.
What about the woman who has the camera and it's moving images for the profit?
Yeah.
Could she just... did that?
God, we just had Dean Stirling on as well. We could have asked him on this.
Is he in Harry Potter?
He's in Love Island.
You got so excited there.
I made such a cunt of myself in front of Ian Stirling.
Wow.
I love Ian Stirling. This is an autism moment. I was trying out a thing at the BAFTAs where I was like trying out a new greeting.
Is this the kind of thing that you need to think about, like trying new greetings and stuff?
I was trying out a new thing. I thought it'd be cool, and it wasn't a greeting. It was like I was saying bye to people, and it was my friends, and like Rachel Jackson was there, and I was like, "Don't guzzle too much cum."
Take this as a... that's... you met her more than once after this yoga thing you were talking about.
I'm getting a poor ready remembering this. And Ian was there, and I love Ian. And like last time I saw him, he was showing me a magic trick. And I forget that people are different in different environments.
Your electronics near you.
People are different in different circumstances, whereas I think I'm the same consistently.
Uh-huh.
And I met, and I was like, oh, hi, Anne. He was with a woman from Love Island. And I was like, oh, hi. And first of all, she went, well, I didn't actually audition for Love Island. They sent me a private message. And I joked and went, oh, they sent me a private message as well because they were looking for like a big fat lassie. Expect your grandma. And she stared at me and was like, did they? And I was like, no. No, they didn't. And she was like, don't call yourself fat. And I was like, well, I think I can call myself whatever the fuck I like because it's me. Yeah. And then she went to leave and I went, don't guzzle too much cum. And she was so deeply offended. And oh, Ian was like, oh, that's Ashley. She's just like that sometimes. And I was like, brilliant. I've got autism.
She's just like that sometimes.
Don't guzzle too much cum, I shouted at her. And you know that's like something she probably worries about.
And you thought
that's good advice.
Yeah.
You end up with a wet mouth if you do that, don't you? I want to hear about William Shatner.
Oh, damn.
Well, so
Well, there was one before we got into Shatner. There was one gig that we were doing at the Stand, and there was
No, I can't do it. This is the worst gig of my life. This is the worst gig of my life. Really? Do you know I was drugged?
What?
I had been at my friend's house. I have to be very special and specific here and not say anything, but I was at my friend's house and there was a load of cannabis laced butter in the fridge, and I didn't know yet. And I didn't know, and I had been eating toast all fucking day. Right. And I was so cunted and fucked, and I didn't know what was happening. And I'm not a druggy person. You know, I'm not like a party girl. That's why I don't have friends in comedy, because everybody goes out and drinks and has fun, and I go home and write fan fiction about Love Island. So I had eaten all this cannabis butter, and he phoned me when I was walking from his house to the Stand, and he was like, you owe me 150 quid, like you've tanned this fucking butter that was like laced with THC. And I was like, got to that gig, had a full on panic while I was on stage because I saw the hologram doctor from Star Trek Voyager in the audience, thought I was hallucinating, ran home in tears.
And then I got a picture with him afterwards.
Ran home in tears, then he messaged me and went, oh, you missed the guy for Star Trek, he was in the audience.
What's his name?
Robert Picardo.
Wow.
Played the doctor and the hologram doctor in Star Trek Voyager. I thought, I've eaten that much cannabis, I'm having a psychotic break, and I'm seeing the hologram from Star Trek in the audience.
What are the odds of that? That's crazy, isn't it?
Amazing.
It was horrible.
I don't remember you having a bad gig though.
Oh, it was awful. For me it was awful. It was bad. I didn't like it. But like, also, I suppose
if you spent your life masking, you can hide that you've had too much cannabis butter for 20 minutes on stage or something.
Could you?
Well, Steve thinks so.
I couldn't remember you like off your face or anything.
No, I was just talking really slowly because I was really worried I was talking fast, but I wasn't. So I was just being like this. And also staring directly at the man who I thought was a hallucination.
Well, if he plays a hologram in the thing,
that makes sense. Yeah. That a brain would hallucinate that.
Yeah. And then William Shatner, you've always been obsessed. We've got a pal, Martin Quinn, who's the new Scotty.
New Scotty.
Yeah, I've heard. Oh. I wanted Ross Scott to be the new Scotty.
He did audition.
I auditioned as well. Did you?
Yeah, he helped me film.
I helped him.
I'm just nice. Is he a Scottish person?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's glad he's a Scottish person.
He's a good boy, man.
Yeah,
because he was a Canadian, obviously. Jimmy Dugan.
Yeah.
William Shatner.
Because when we get together, you'd always talk about your William Shatner cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah, it was real. It's gone in the bin now.
Oh, no.
But he's no longer the love of your life.
I just think it's weird to like have a giant cutout of a man from the 70s when I'm cracking one off my room, Stephen.
But did you used to do it for you?
Yeah, I did. But then it's like, you know, with like any relationship, things go.
you drifted apart from your cardboard cutout.
I drifted apart from my pretend boyfriend.
But he's like tweeted you and stuff before. Have you ever met him in real life?
No, don't want to.
But he's tweeted you and stuff? Is that when it started getting more weird than you thought?
Can't like masturbate to some old man who's like tweeting you on the internet. No, I'm kidding.
You're probably the only person in history that's got a cardboard cutout of one of the reply guys.
No, I love him. And he's like really encouraging of my endeavours. And like when he went to space, I watched him go into space. And he was very touched that I had been touched by him going to space. Mm-hmm. I wrote a song when I was younger about how much I loved him that was to the Little Mermaid's Part of Your World.
Sure.
And it was amazing. Had the line, up where they walk, up where they run, up where they set all phasers to stun.
Well, that's good.
And I sent it to him and he was like, I don't know whether to be touched or terrified. And I was like, be both. Nice. But he's always been cute and I love him. And
did you ever write fan fiction about him and Star Trek?
No, but Star Trek is where fan fiction comes from.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
the original fan fiction was like from zines that were essentially like wee middle-aged women like writing wee Star Trek stories. It was usually about Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
Shagging. And
nice.
Yeah, so where the term slash comes from to mean gay.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm. Martin Quinn was saying that even on the show, the writers check the fan forums just to make sure that they're all the lore is correct, because like most of these people will know better than the writers themselves.
Yeah, and also what timeline is it taking place in?
Yeah.
Is it the because Abrams changed the timeline.
I don't know.
Oh, so there's different, different timelines, different
like,
canon.
Yeah, there's it's weird. So it's like, what universe is this taking in?
And are you still into it as much? Like, but you've sort of moved
I don't
on.
Like the new Star Treks. Uh-huh. I don't. I didn't know this would be a thing, but when I tried to watch Picard, the swearing.
The swearing?
It made me sad. I was like, but we've evolved to a time past swearing.
But even because, like, if you're not, there's a, you, I mean, you swear a lot in your stand-up and that, and you, if someone was like, oh, why
I'm
you
not
swear?
The admiral of a spaceship, Steve.
Much to your chagrin, I imagine.
Much to my chagrin.
That's fair.
Season 2 of Dinosaur, let's see what takes place.
No, we're going to, I want Stephen, I've, like, got it in my head already, I want Stephen to be, like, my arch nemesis from, like, PhD.
Yes.
Who's got like different views on dinosaurs
yes.
and is in the terms of paleontology.
Doesn't even exist.
No. But in terms of like paleontology, I think you should be like really cool, but not cool compared to other cool people, but cool in the world
paleontology.
Of
paleontology. That's a great character.
I do love that kind of, you know, when you see people, because I'm in so many different like little niche nerdy pockets,
mm-hmm.
I love when you go to like Comic Con and there's this like some guy with a trilby and a waistcoat with like playing cards on it. But in that world, he's fucking king.
He's the king,
and
yeah.
I love that.
That's amazing.
I love that vibe.
You see that in comedy a lot as well. It's like, yeah, people that like, you know, they become cool and
you
in
talk
that
about
world.
That guy who actually has playing cards all over.
Well, that's yeah, you do get some of him.
Is he doing comedy now? I thought he was just a person who threatened you in the street.
I think he's a magician or something like
that. No, but yeah, it's another place where people that were nerdy or whatever grow up and then they suddenly become, you know, the hot comic and then they
and
go
it's the worst thing.
Yeah,
it.
So ego.
It's not even all ego, it's just you can tell that like this is the first time you've been like an object of desire.
Yes.
And you're not using your power for good, you're using it for bad.
And when not just talking about CMB here, by the way.
The edgelord
strikes again.
CMB not got like a long-term girlfriend.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about, I was just talking about Jane. I'm not talking about saying this up here shagging about or
no,
something.
I was like, please
is that where
we
used to go now? I was wondering why he's so upset. I was like, make those though, he's like, thinks he's cool on it.
Yeah, CMB thinks he's cool. He walks about with his little satchel, his little tote with like some book about like, oh yeah, this is about Akawazi, he's a philosopher of, and then you're like, shut up, Morrison.
Yeah, and he's up and does jokes about cereal.
I adore him, and he lets me carry him like a baby, and that's what makes me love him more.
See,
you won't let me carry you like a baby.
I'm too heavy.
You're absolutely not too fucking heavy for me. Me and Roscoe worked out we could bench press CMB. So,
but he's like what, 3 stone or something.
Yeah.
No, I know exactly how much he weighs. We had to work out how much he weighed so that when we went to the gym, we could bench press the equivalency of him. So,
good.
Yeah,
11 stone.
What was that noise?
No,
that's your good hearing again.
It was like
sometimes it'd be a wee squirrel or something.
Oh, great!
You're not scared of them,
I don't like rodents.
All right, it's fine. It's probably not.
Squirrels are cute.
They
got birds.
Oh,
the grey squirrels are bad. I think no red
racist.
Squirrels. No, it is no. The,
so racist.
No, they are the greys that are the problem.
Oh, is it the greys that are the problem?
The greys are coming over, stealing the reds' nuts.
You can play a grey squirrel though.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Because he's here.
No, just his wee face.
Yeah, no, is that a grey joke? Is it? Yeah.
We're all going grey, Stephen.
No.
There's no shame in it. So are you dyeing your hair?
I've got greys. I'm going to try and age gracefully. Uh-huh. See, as long as I can keep a hold of my hairline, I'll age gracefully with the greys. I don't mind.
You thinking about Botox?
What?
I got it.
Do you think I should have it?
No, I'm just like, I got it. And it was great.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What? Whereabouts?
Where do you think, Stephen?
I don't want to answer.
Want it. Just so I can see the difference, like a variable scientific experiment.
No, I'm going to just try.
I just mean it's not noticeable.
No, I just got it on my forehead.
Mm-hmm. And there? Yeah. Can you do this?
Yeah, I can now. It's wore off.
Ah.
But it was great.
No, it's good.
For the brief space of time that it froze my face, I felt great.
But you need it for acting, don't you? You need to be able to do that.
I don't know, I play an autistic paleontologist.
Actually, can we just have a whole Botox, please? See, you talk about fan fiction and stuff like that and Comic Con and that type of thing. I was wondering, see, because you've obviously had that relationship with like, people like William Shatner and that, you've got that kind of, you know, you had a cardboard cutout of them.
Mm.
See people that come to your shows and that are fans of you now, How have you had that the other way where people are really into you, and do you attract maybe, are some of them like quite obsessive types or anything like that? Or?
A wee bit, because I get a lot of neurodiverse people who are really keen. I think the weirdest kind of fan base, it's not weird, it's just the strangest kind of relationship. I don't know anybody else who has this because of my ma, and because I've kind of been raised in comedy.
Yeah,
lots of these people have known me since I was like 11.
Sure.
So they feel a sort of like parental ownership over me.
Yeah.
And it's like I'll see them and they'll be like, "Oh, I've known you since you're a baby. No, I'm so proud." And it's a different kind of
yeah.
relationship. It's a very strange but also adorable, but it's odd. There's no like rule book on how to kind of handle that thing where people kind of feel like they know you and it's like a parental, like they're your aunties kind of thing.
Yeah, because you know, everybody wants to rebel against their parents at some point, but you'd be effectively rebelling against your audience. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can't say anything bad about her. They go, yeah. Oh.
And like, and then, so you've got that, and then obviously there's people that like maybe like a younger audience and stuff like that, that they relate to you as well and stuff. Yeah. So very nice mix, I would imagine.
Yeah. No, I did a show last night and it was a very weird mix of like really, really young, like gender non-binary, brightly dressed, like funky kids who are very young, and then like my ma's pals. the weirdest interaction I had is that when I was just at lockdown, I was at my heaviest and I was really sad and I was doing a Facebook live stream and I was like crying on my live stream, like, and I went to the gym and I came out the gym and there was this woman just driving past me and she was like, "Have you tried the keto diet?" And I just thought, she just thought, "Oh, there's a fat woman, I should give her advice."
Oh, fuck's sake.
And I was like, "What?" And then she like turned around and she's like, "I've been driving about here looking for you for hours," and then handed me a pile of books. "Hi, Rona." It was a very weird.
And Stuart's across the door. Fuck, there's actually a story.
You're like, "What was that?"
Oh, it made me insane. And they did it every time they saw me. Every time. And it meant I couldn't pretend to not see them. And that was like, if I see people on the street, I just pretend not to see them and just walk home. I don't want to stop and talk to you on Great Western Road at 10 o'clock at night. And it's like, "Oh, hi, hi." And then it's awkward because I've heard her go, "It's Ashley Stoney."
You probably shouldn't put any of this in.
I fucking did my tits out.
But that was quite nice that people stopped and gave advice. So, well, I mean, it's like people that feel like they can do that, I suppose, if they've got
no,
that familiar.
Creepy. I was in like an industrial estate at my gym, and she'd been driving about working out my location based off of where she saw me walk to on my live stream.
Yeah, wow. That's weird.
I do wonder that sometimes, like, because you know, Lemmy will sometimes like post like he's at a cycle or whatever.
Oh, it makes me so nervous.
People could easily go out and fucking find them.
I think he might. Do you think he posts them after?
Well, this is what I wonder. But then, because I've seen Frankie do it in the park and all that, and I always wonder, like, I could be there in 5 minutes, and you go, like, if he's getting fucking hundreds of thousands of followers, I'm fucking weirdo.
It'd have to be after, you'd think.
You'd think, man, but you know, maybe.
Have you ever had a fan write fan fiction about you and let you know about it?
Not let me know about it. I really hope that I hope there's like filth written about Dinosaur. I would take delight in. I think it's great. I love it. I love fan fiction. I think it's so funny. I love the community. I love the people in it. It just makes me laugh.
There were three of us in that marriage. Diana callback, boom! Back in the good books.
On that note, I think that's
such an edgelord.
I was when I was seven and I didn't understand the jokes. That's, you know.
Ooh, that could be a friend show name. Edging Lord.
You think I'm going to get people to the precipice of climax and then thanks very much, good night.
Nearly make them laugh.
That's usually what I do.
You're a ladies man, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I remember watching you hit on girls at
hit
the stands.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you had your, you were like, "Oh, I don't use an iPhone because I'm too cool."
Yeah, I was off the internet for the night. I didn't have an iPhone.
There was that girl who spoke to you when you were on stage and then you thought that she liked you and you went out into the corridor and you asked her out in front of everybody and she said no.
I don't remember.
I remember it.
Well, imagine
like,
it.
Because at the time it
happened.
Have you blocked this from your memory?
I evidently am. Like your entire childhood stand-up career, I block it every rejection.
It was brave though. It it was like there was all those people stood there, and you were just like,
oh, I wasn't on stage while I done this. I don't think.
No, you were on stage flirting with her, and then we went into the corridor while everybody was leaving.
That's a long time ago, by the way.
And you had your little flip phone, and you were like, "Do you want to put your number in there?" And she was like, "No."
Oh man, oh, that's crushing.
I know, it's not. It was brave.
That's good.
You've got to shoot your shot.
You shoot your fucking shot. I respected you for it. I mean, I laughed so hard, but then I was like, and because I'm tall, I could see over everybody, and I could see your face, and it was like sad, but it was like, oh, but that was brave, wasn't it?
Fair play, you've got to do it.
But you're a ladies' man.
Evidently not for that fucking story.
Not that lady.
But you've got like statistics and that on your side.
What?
What do you mean?
Are you asking like
if you shoot your shot enough times,
yeah,
well, you know,
statistically, and you're non-problematic.
Well, I hope
do it. So I just think you should lean into the sex appeal.
There right. Okay. Well,
edging lord. I'm trying to sell you this name.
Well, tickets are just on sale for the Fringe, and I probably do have still time to change the name. So come and see that.
What's it called?
So I was going to call it. Years ago, when I worked in a call centre, I thought if I got out the call centre, I would do this show and I'd call it Jenko Unchained. and I told them that, right? And they all laughed at me, obviously.
And said, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
But this year, I had to come up with a name and I hadn't really thought about it. And I just thought it was kind of funny, but it is problematic, of course.
Yeah.
This is the thing. But I think it is a good name. Wasn't the connotations of slavery and all that, and it's not about
anything. You didn't call it that.
I've called it Marxism. It's CES.
And is it about Marxism?
No, it's about. But the idea is like it's just my philosophy on everything.
All right, very cool.
It's actually right, isn't it?
Yeah. I still think Edging Lord is a great.
That's next year's show.
Yeah,
next
year's show.
Well, maybe we'll call it. Maybe when we put the special out, we'll change it to that. But I do think that about covers it, Ashley. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been
this
so much fun.
Luxurious studio.
Aye.
Down by the riverside.
You're welcome anytime. Yeah, that's it. Right. BBC Studios.
The geography isn't working out.
That's like the pilot of Dinosaur.
That was the joke.
I was just pointing out for the people who are falling behind, all right?
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for finally allowing me on your podcast. I've been fucking raging about it and seething for literally months.
Nah.
I've been like, every time I get news, or you can look at my comments on Instagram, every time like, oh, it's coming out on Hulu, I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'll get on the Comedian's podcast now.
Can
maybe
I be honest?
That'll be me famous enough to get on their fucking podcast at this point.
I wasn't sure if you were leaving the house, Ashley, still after COVID, honestly. That is partly the reason.
And also, it was Stu that didn't want you on.
I knew it. That wee fucking wavy. Oh, I've had a glow up. Fuck you. Hunter's a wee lass. He's like, oh, he's gorgeous.
Hey, listen, story of my life. Anyway, Ashley, where can people find you? Once again, where can people find Dinosaur? It is out now on BBC iPlayer.
It'll be out now on BBC iPlayer and Hulu, and you can follow me on Instagram. And you can also listen to, I do a podcast with Nikki Chapman about Midsummer Murders.
Amazing.
The official Midsummer Murder podcast.
Okay. And where can people find your fan fiction?
If you know, you know.
And people can follow you at Ashley Story.
Yeah, on Instagram. Can I say hello to Grace? She watches this. Hello, Grace. Stuart wasn't here. She's the one she fancies. Stuart. She met him. I introduced her to him.
Mm-hmm.
Grace, she's very nice. She's Grace. She's she was a runner on Dinosaur. She's very sweet. And she was like, oh my God, can I meet Stuart? And I was like, this is Stuart. And she walked up to him and was like, last time I saw you, you were drunk in Hawaiian blowjobs. And then ran away.
Nice to meet you, Grace.
No.
Kind of.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Ashley. And as ever, please remember to like and subscribe on YouTube. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And you can follow us at SomeLaughPod on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter. And send any question you've got to the email address, which is somelaughpod@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for tuning in, guys, and we'll speak to you very soon.